The history of math is our intellectual foundation for understanding science. Science. Beautiful, awesome, wonderful science. It's the creative foundation for our ineffable future. Hi, I'm Gabrielle Burchak, and this is my podcast, Math, Science, History. In the year 415, the infamous philosopher and mathematician Hypatia of Alexandria, Egypt, was savagely murdered by church monks. This murder shocked the Roman community and its government leaders. Hypatia was known far and wide as a respected philosopher, mathematician, government advisor, and a professor. Hypatia, The Sum of Her Life, is a book that I wrote that looks not just at the circumstances surrounding her death, but also at the sum of her entire life. I weave in the details of her education, disciples, Neoplatonic philosophies, female contemporaries, and the many mathematics that she wrote and taught about. There is truly more to Hypatia's life than her death. Hypatia, The Sum of Her Life, written by me, Gabrielle Burchak, is now on sale on Amazon. Buy your copy today. Before I begin my podcast on Women's History Month, I want to note that when I mention women in science, I'm talking about women of all races and from all countries. But I'm also talking about transgender women in science who greatly inspire other women and trans women to take up science. Ladies, you are all amazing. In 18th century Europe, there was an increase in women entering the field of science, more so than in the 17th century. Something occurred across Europe that encouraged women to read, question, and debate the study of science. Women were inspired by science. Maybe it started with the printing press and the mass production of books. Possibly it was the Enlightenment and its influence on empirical thought. Perhaps it was the gathering of women for intellectual conversation. In cafes, homes, salons, and boudoirs, where all women were invited, regardless of class or aristocracy. Thus, across Europe, there was a significant uptick in the attendance of women involved in the studies and observation of astronomy, anatomy, mathematics, physics, biology, and other academic and scientific fields. Women who met in these scholarly gatherings found scientific inspiration during the 18th century. They were empowered, and through their meetings, they realized that they had human rights, academic rights, and the right to be part of empirical science. Moreover, though they faced backlash for their efforts to educate themselves, they found strength and valor through their gatherings. Between the 16th and 17th centuries, there was a slow development of women in science. However, Europe experienced a considerable increase of women in science by the 18th century, specifically in Italy, France, Germany, Britain, Sweden, Switzerland, America, China, and the Netherlands. As a result, after the 18th century, as the world entered an age of the Industrial Revolution, the French Revolution, and the new imperialism, women had established a small foothold in science. Regardless, they still did not stand on equal footing with their male counterparts. On the contrary, women were still significantly outnumbered by men in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, just as they are today. What happened within the 18th century that set women up for success and presented opportunities for them? Especially since, though some men advocated for women's education, women still encountered overt dissonance from the male community. How did women make so much progress despite the opposition from a society that believed that women should be at home and not gathering to discuss science? The answer is that they proved that there was power in numbers. They began to gather. What started this movement in the 18th century? Did it just occur in the 18th century? Or were there factors behind this development of women gathering to talk? Well, We can answer these questions by looking at the 16th and 17th centuries across Europe. In the 16th century, in 1543, Nicholas Copernicus published his work On the Revolutions on the Celestial Spheres, which shook the Aristotelian foundations of Catholicism. Then, in 1616, the Catholic Church claimed heliocentrism to be heretical. As noted in my previous shows, with the advanced developments in the telescope in the early 17th century, Galileo discovered that the Earth is not the center of the universe and stated so in his published work, Dialogue Concerning the Two Chief World Systems. Empirical science began to challenge the authority of the Catholic Church, which had a foothold in academia. Then, in the late 17th and early 18th centuries, John Locke published Essay Concerning Human Understanding, and David Hume published A Treatise of Human Nature. Men were gathering in cafes, pubs, and homes for discussions in politics, science, literature, and art. Women were inspired by this and began to form their own gatherings. Between watching men gather and watching the church waver under the influence of empiricism, women viewed the usurping force of empirical science as an opportunity to pursue scholarship without fear of the church's authority. Thus, they often sought attendance at the debating societies. Even so, they were still met with conflict and insults. Historian Mary Thale points out that the 1752 Drury Lane journalists noted, even when women were admitted, men saw their presence at these debates as an, quote, incursion. Even so, this did not dissuade 18th century women. They began to recognize that they had human rights and inserted themselves in male-dominated science by building personal laboratories, exhibiting their works, and publishing their discoveries, even though the realms of discovery were socially reserved for men. The first two areas of Europe that perpetuated the movement for women in science were Italy and France. In Italy, Maria Gaetana Agnesi and Laura Bassi obtained doctorates and positions within the universities. These two women became the focal point of Italian academia. For Agnesi, Pope Benedict XIV offered her the honorary chair in natural philosophy and mathematics at the University of Bologna in 1750. In 1731, at only 20 years old, Bassi was the first woman in Europe granted a degree in science and the first woman to become a professor in an Italian university. If you're interested to learn more about Bassi, you can listen to my podcast from season 1, episode 4 about her. In France, they had the mathematician Gabriel Emile Le Tonnelier de Boutet, Marquise du Châtelet, also known as Emilie du Châtelet. She wrote 6 works. Her story is somewhat unique even today. She had multiple lovers, including Voltaire, and she loved to gamble, but she also loved mathematics. Gabrielle published her first work, Essay on the Nature and Spread of Fire, in 1737. Then, in 1740, she published Physical Institutions. Within 2 years of its publication, this work had been copied, translated into multiple languages, and distributed beyond Europe. The book looked at the physics and the mechanics of Newtonian physics. It was groundbreaking and created a debate within the scientific community as many endeavored to understand Newtonian physics. She also wrote a French translation and a commentary on Isaac Newton's Mathematical Principles of Natural Philosophy, which, at that time, was the foundation to understanding the fundamental laws of physics. However, in 1749, at the age of 42, shortly after giving birth, she died before she had a chance to publish it. Nevertheless, this work was published posthumously in 1756, and it became the standard works on physics for France. Also, after her death, Denis Diderot and Jean Leroy de Lambert wrote about her philosophies, mathematics, and scientific writings in their work known as Encyclopedia. As a result, du Châtelet even after her death, inspired multiple women to venture into the world of math and science. Then, around 1760, while Italy was presenting thinking women as anomalies in the world of academia, women in France opened their home salons for other women to meet and discuss the sciences. These salons became a forum for educated French women to converse on many topics, including mathematics, physics, politics, philosophy, botany, and medicine. Though many of these affluent women were patrons of the salons, these gatherings did not marginalize other women. Uneducated women who were not aristocrats could also attend and discuss the ideas of the Enlightenment. Soon, many of these gatherings were taking place across Britain. Some prominent women at these gatherings included the first British female historian, Catherine Macaulay, whose prominent book, Letters on Education, impacted education. In her book, Macaulay appealed to the development of tax-supported public education for, quote, all the subordinate classes of citizens, unquote. Macaulay, along with several other women, became founding members of the Blue Stocking Society. This society encouraged other gatherings among women across Britain. Furthermore, the writings of Macaulay served as an inspiration to the author Mary Wollstonecraft, who in 1792 published her work, A Vindication of the Rights of Woman. As a result, in the 18th century, the foundations of inspiration for women in science had been set. Though women were still not allowed into the laboratories and the universities, they took up significant interest in all areas of science, including natural science, botany, physics, mathematics, and medicine. They would hold gallery events that would display their specimens and knowledge. They wrote books. They encouraged the schools to let young girls attend to learn the value of science, literature, mathematics, and socializing. They didn't just dabble, they immersed themselves in science. Even so, they were derided and insulted as these women forced their entrance into the world of science. Because they were viewed as infringing on a men's world, there was much resistance to letting women in academia and science. It wasn't until 1742 that Countess Benigna von Zinzendorf established the first all-girls school in the United States. In 1764, Catherine the Great of Russia established institutions to allow girls to receive advanced education. In 1788, she established public education for elementary and high school girls. In 1787, Sweden and Denmark established universities that allowed women to go to school. In the 18th century, women found inspiration. America had horticulturalist Martha Daniel Logan, biologist Jane Colden, and inventor Catherine Green. Antigua had Lydia Byam, who was a naturalist. In Britain, historian Catherine Macaulay wrote about the history of science. Also, chemist Elizabeth Fulham established a foothold in science in 1794. In China, Wang Zhenyi established herself as an astronomer in 1788. France brought us botanist Catherine Jeremy, anatomist Marie-Marguerite Biheron, chemist Marie Lavoisier, and mathematicians Sophie Germain and Marie-Anne Pidgeon. In Germany, Christine and Margherita Kirch flourished in astronomy in 1716. In Italy, Christina Roccata was known for her accomplishments in physics. Anna Morandi Manzolini was known for her work in medicine, and Maria Ardengeli was known for her work in mathematics. In Spain, Maria Andrea Casamayor became known for her knowledge of mathematics as early as 1720. In 1771, Maria Cristina Brun flourished as an inventor. In 1754, in Sweden, Elsa Bidabunge succeeded as a botanist. And in 1771, Maria Cristina Brun flourished as an inventor. In Switzerland, Anna Barbara Reinhardt established herself in the world of mathematics. And in 1785, Jacoba van den Brand established the first all-female science academy in the Netherlands. Though this list is long, it is not long enough. There are so many more worth noting who immersed themselves in science and inspired other women to join the wonderful world of discovery. That said, I will post a spreadsheet on my website at mathsciencehistory.com, which lists all the women in the 18th century that I have researched. These women inspired other women. Germany's Dorothea Urxelben even wrote about her inspirations. She had sent letters to Laura Bassi in Italy, telling her of her adoration for women in in science, especially Bassi. Soon, one by one, women began to tread the trail for other women in science. That trail turned into a path that has become a well-paved freeway that invites women from every country, every race, and every prior gender to join the world of science. According to the International Labor Organization and data gathered by Magdalena Smigiera, in the country of Georgia, women encompass 56% of the STEM-based workforce. In the United States, 48% of the STEM-based workforce includes women. In the United Kingdom, women encompass 40% of the STEM-based workforce. In Austria, the percentage of women working in STEM is 35%. Furthermore, the top five countries that employ women in STEM include Mongolia, Kiribati, Dominican Republic, and Cambodia. And though some of these numbers look promising, we still need more women in STEM. In Niger, only 10% of the STEM-based workforce includes women. Additionally, among 110 countries, only 30% of female students choose to study STEM in higher education. Furthermore, though these numbers look promising, according to the National Science Foundation, only 34% of women work in the STEM workforce globally. Thus, there is no one-to-one ratio between women and men in science. But I am optimistic, and I believe that these numbers will continue to grow. I believe it. We have our struggles, and sometimes we fall out of the pipeline. However, the doors will only be open as long as we keep them open and as long as we continue to gather. Because when women in STEM gather, we share our most powerful attribute, which is knowledge. We empower, we inspire, and we motivate. Our history is rich with stimulating stories about women who have changed the world and have shown the world that when we gather, the world changes. That's not just the power of math, science, and history. That is also the power of women. Until next time, carpe diem. Thank you for joining me at Math Science History. Please remember to subscribe to the show. Also, if you could leave a rating or a review, it would be so appreciated. Those ratings and reviews really help to increase my listenership. If you want to learn more about the history of math and science, please visit me at mathsciencehistory.com. And if you like what you're listening to, please feel free to click on that cup of coffee image and buy me a cup of coffee, or two, or three, or four. Because every cup of coffee that you buy helps me to pay for the expenses that go into making this podcast. Also, if you're interested in leaving me a comment or chatting with me, you can always find me on your preferred social media platform, including Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Goodreads. Just search for Gabrielle Burchak. Until next time, carpe diem!